The following programming is sponsored by Thomas Tool III. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Good afternoon, Greater Philadelphia area. This is Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. She's Sarah Time, and we both work at the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline, the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania since 2018. And we have got some financial news to cover. The Federal Reserve is meeting as we speak. We've got the outlook and the odds on what will happen there, as well as the lowest mortgage rates that we've seen since February 2023. We've also got some industry news about what's happening with NAR and the Clear Cooperation meeting last week. And I got some insider news as well about how that meeting went. And there's some interesting comments coming from baby boomers about real estate we're going to unpack in the third segment. So if you like what you hear, you get some value out of this, make sure to subscribe to the channel, hit the bell for notifications. And if you want to schedule a call with our team and Sarah in particular to navigate how to take advantage of these ultra low mortgage rates since the beginning of 2023, you can do that with the link in the comments. So before we get into all the economic data and what's happening with the Fed, tell me what impact these rates have had on your business, Sarah, because we're seeing a 6.11% national average. We've seen like 5 5/8 like lock-ins locally here. These are the lowest mortgage rates that we've seen since February of 2023. What's the reaction been in the marketplace? What are you seeing? Is activity bubbling up? Tell me more.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been very positive. Also for clients of mine that I have their listings and we haven't gotten quite, you know, the offers that they were looking to get. Mm-hmm. So this was great news to be able to share, with them. And yeah, I mean, I've had quite a few conversations with buyers about this as well. And that's a big jump what we've seen here. So that's like real, you know, hundreds of dollars a month savings.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that we've talked about this before, that like there's this waiting till the spring or this mindset that, you know, the year's almost over. But these rates, there could be a mini rally here in the fall. We covered that last week. And if you look at some of the internal data on this, the first thing you want to look at is purchase applications. And it's the fastest way to look for, you know, positive or negative data towards mortgage rates. And they're obviously very seasonal. And what we saw happen is that purchase applications ticked up. So it's really like, do they go up or down week to week? And we've seen them climb so far since like the end of August through this past week, the second week in September. And that happened because rates fell. So that tells you that there's more buyers coming back to the market. And along with like the pop in inventory that we've seen, it's up 22.9% year to date in the greater Philadelphia area. These are things that buyers should be aware of, but also sellers if they have a place they need to go. So what are you seeing here? Are you seeing this activity? Like, I want to get like some on the ground, like case studies here. I mean, I know you've got some pretty active buyers you're working with. Mm-hmm. What is all this? Are they getting it? Are you having any interesting conversations with people that you thought were maybe like 12 months out that might be moving up their time frame? What's happening?
Honestly, I would say I noticed a uptick, and I think this would just be, I mean, it could spread to like everybody, but I noticed in my business and with my clients, I noticed an uptick probably like 2 weeks ago. So that wouldn't necessarily, I mean, there was a lot of talk about what is going to happen with the feds, but I think it was just maybe more homes that kind of fit the right needs happened to pop at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it was totally based off of rates, but I noticed like a week ago, you know, activity, like requests for showings started to go up.
Well, and if you look at inventory, and that's a really good point, because like sometimes the house is what moves people, which it should be what moves people in most cases. We saw that last week nationally, there was a 10,014 home increase in inventory. That's a big bump for this time of year. We saw a similar bump last year, and now we are at the inventory peak for 2024, which typically that'll happen a little earlier in the year, pre-pandemic. And just for some context, we're still about 500,000 homes short compared to 2015, although this is trending in the right direction. I mean, if you look at these numbers that, and there's a real interesting chart here We're not at 2019 levels, but we're above 2020 levels. And it's nationally, it's 38% more than last year. Obviously, we're a little bit less. So when that stuff happens and you've got all this news about what's going on with the Fed, which we're going to get into in a second here, I'm clear that there's a window in time for folks, like basically like now up until the beginning of December, if they want to get into a property, you might see lower rates now than you will later. I mean, we don't know what rates are going to do long term. I mean, they could stay here. They could move up. We're not really sure. There's an opportunity right now if you didn't feel like the rates like this time last year were for you when they were at 8%. So right. Do you have anyone maybe adjusting their plans like that? Maybe I know you're talking to some people that have a couple different things going on. I know we're seeing it a little bit, but it seems like the market's been a little slow to react to this.
Right. I would say I don't know that people have completely adjusted their plans, but they've maybe now increased their budgets a little bit.
Okay.
And they're kind of like, because at some of these different price points, if you're able to bump up just a little bit more, you can maybe get a lot of those like mm-hmm. ticket items that you're looking for, and you don't have to make as many compromises. So I've noticed that. And I think there's just like, this is a great time to get out there where you know, who knows, as all the numbers kind of come into play, mm-hmm. buyers will come out. But there's always like, I mean, there are some properties that are going to go within the first day or two way over it. Like there's going to be a lot of competition. And then at the exact same time, right around the corner, there could be another one that is doing a price reduction. So kind of, you know, just touching in with those agents and seeing what the deal is and finding out where you may be able to negotiate things out a little bit more, I think really goes a long way.
I'm glad you talked about price adjustments, because there's some other data here that I think this is where a lot of consumers, they really need some guidance, because we're seeing the average time on market's 11 days, or the median, excuse me, in the entire metro Philadelphia area, according to Bright, which is incredibly low. When you just think about 3-4 years ago, it was like 40 mm-hmm. was kind of the right number. So now technology has caused people to move faster. There's a lot of things that are in play with that number. Consumers don't understand that in a lot of cases. And if you look at the number of properties with price adjustments, so we saw 40.1% of all the homes that are out there right now are going on, are having a price adjustment, right? So that's compared to 37% last year, 41% in 2022 when the market was a little hairy the second half of the year. So we're seeing a little over one third of all homes making a price adjustment, and that's pretty standard. What folks don't get is that the standards went out the window 2020 to 2022, 2023. So seeing price adjustments is important, but the most savvy buyers, you know what they do, Sarah?
They get in before the price adjustment.
Yes, and they write an offer. So how do you coach people to do that? Because this is something that, you know, agents, they do a horrible job explaining these things. And a lot of times you can get the home for maybe less than what you would pay for it after the price adjustment.
Right. So I, you know, like to stress to my clients, you know, I always look at how many days it's been on market. And, you know, there is definitely like that 2-week point. Like if you get to 14 days, the likelihood of there being a price adjustment within the next few days goes up. That's going to also depend on like the seller motivation. There's no one set way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we go out and we look at a home, like if there is interest from my client, I am immediately reaching out to the listing agent to get whatever information they can share
Smart.
With me. And yes, like oftentimes being it, you can get a better price writing the offer prior to the price adjustment. Because once that price drops, it gets back on people's radar. And it has absolutely happened before where it ends up going for more than what, you know, they do the mm-hmm. price drop and then it ends
goes
up
above,
selling
yeah.
for like what it had been listed at prior to the price drop. But now there's more, you know, people are paying attention to it again and it gets back on their radar. So getting in there and writing the offer prior to the adjustment is absolutely the way to go. And oftentimes the agent will tell you, hey, yeah, like we're still listed at this, but there's going to be certain language that they use, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I encourage you to still write the offer.
Yeah, put it
like,
in writing, yeah.
How far off are you? Like, it's still, I will present it. I will, you know, And when you start hearing things like that, like, that's a great time to get in there. And now I also would say at the same time, you don't want to write some ridiculously lowball offer that's going to offend the seller and kind of have them mm-hmm. not want to work with you. You want to be realistic with what you're going in at and just kind of prep for your negotiations. But yes, like, get in before they do the price adjustment.
Yeah, and you definitely don't want to tick off the seller. And right. I'm saying this nicely because that will happen. Yep. So it's more of, what number are you a buyer? And asking yourself the question, like, what's the best thing that happens if I write the offer? What's the worst thing? What's the likely outcome? But you got to know the data. So a good agent is doing what Sarah does, which is that 2-week mark. Like, let's go in there. Let's get aggressive. Even if you think it's not quite right, let's go see it. Mm-hmm. And this is where the client communication by real estate agents, we've been talking about this a lot at our team, that when there's nothing to do, like, you struggle with what to say to people when you have nothing to show them. Or,
yeah,
so that's fair, right? And but I mean, we've coached on it, but I mean, it's a normal question. So saying things like, "Hey, I haven't seen anything new. I'm not sure if you'd be open minded to maybe any homes that you've been keeping your eye on that you're on the fence about. Why don't we go take a look at them and just, you know, kind of get people into those, because there's a lot of cases where, hey, if this home was like $25,000 or $50,000 less, I'd be interested. Well, what if they make that adjustment? Then. Right. The whole market's probably going to be interested. So that's really...
Right. So you want to get ahead of it. And a lot of times buyers will have, and you have to ask them, they may have like a side list of stuff that they have not shared with you yet mm-hmm. because they know it's out of their, where it currently is, like, doesn't work for them. But yeah, like, finding out what that list is and then being able to find out from the agent, maybe even before you go out there, like, hey, is there any room to negotiate on this? Definitely is a great way to... Yeah, get ahead of it.
Well, it's just about having honest communication with people, and that's where you got to build trust and actually, like, ask the right questions. So that's really good advice, what you're talking about there. So that's what we're seeing in the market right now. So if you've been on the fence, be aware of these rates. Now, we've also got a Fed meeting going on right now, and let's go to the odds here. The CME Group, they put these odds on the Federal Reserve adjustments into the basis point cuts that we're going to see. So right now... This has changed a little bit since last week. They did almost exactly, right? You look at the numbers here. There is a 63% chance we're going to see a 50 basis point decrease. And this time last week, it was a 62% chance that we were going to see a 25 basis point decrease. So that's changed a lot. And that's, you know, that's pretty fascinating there. And there's been some people that have been calling for this. So there was a couple senators... Elizabeth Warren was one of them that said, we need a 75 basis point cut.
Wow.
That's not going to happen. I mean, yeah. Wishful thinking by those folks. But Bankrate did a nice job kind of previewing the Fed meeting, because this has been pretty fascinating in that, you know, a lot, this has been widely talked about, like, how much is the rate cut going to be? So a lot of people, you know, they're thinking it's going to be more 25, but now there's just been this push for 50 here. So what do you think is going to happen? I know a couple weeks ago you said 25. Is that still kind of your view on this, Sarah?
I feel like I might be flip-flopping as well. I was, like, very firm, you know, every week as we've been talking about this, that I thought it was going to be 25. But I'm kind of thinking it could go 50 with the, especially, like, with the how much we saw in, like, a change in the rates here mm-hmm. just between last week and this week. I mean, I was surprised when I saw the numbers come out, and I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people have been waiting for this. So, you know, we know Jerome Powell said the time has come to adjust policy. The direction of travel is clear. The timing and pace of cuts will depend on incoming data. Well, so Greg McBride, the chief financial analyst for Bankrate, you know, he came out and said a case could be made either way, which I do agree with. The economy is not falling apart, but the case for a 50 basis point cut is to take out some insurance so the Fed isn't falling behind the curve. And that's what a lot of people are concerned about, is that the Fed's been too slow to act here. And when you look at history is, you know, it's an interesting thing because very rarely, if anything, nothing is happening for the first time right now. And if history indicates the path that the Fed takes, when the Fed was responding to inflation with hikes in 2022, they decided to move first by a quarter point, even if it meant following up with a larger half or three quarter point decrease down the line. So going smaller at first might ease markets into the shift, is what a lot of economists believe. And a lot of people have said they were clearly behind the curve then, and a lot of people think they're behind the curve now, but they may not be behind as they were when inflation was on the way up. But a lot of people do think the Fed should have cut in July, but maybe not irreparable damage has been done. So that's what a lot of people are thinking here. And the Fed usually is conservative when it comes to that. Like, they kind of test the waters a little bit. So then there's the question of, like, what happens to interest rates? So if we see a 50 basis point decrease, do you see rates going any lower? Because I feel like 25 is already baked in right now.
Right, right. is it possible that they've already baked in for the 50? I mean, that seems like that would be going a little bit
maybe
too far.
But
just with where the rates came in at this week, I don't know. I mean, I guess if they weren't accounting for that, and then we do get the 50 basis point reduction, maybe we would see them tick down a little bit. Mm-hmm. A little bit more, but we already saw such a big jump that I don't know that it's going to be drastic.
Yeah, I mean, because the national number is still 6.11, even though we're seeing some lower numbers here. So, I mean, if the national average went into the high fives, that would create a lot of, I mean, I would buckle up if I was you, right? And, well, I would also buckle up. But, I mean, there's going to be a lot of activity, right? There's going to be people coming out of the woodwork if that happens, even though it's not that much of a difference. Mm-hmm. And, you look at unemployment, right? So unemployment's now higher than where it was pre-pandemic. I think that's notable to look at because there was that call for from the Fed that they wanted, like, the labor market to kind of break a little bit. And I don't like seeing high unemployment, but it is higher than where it was pre-pandemic. So and seeing these odds here, I mean, this is pretty well-informed stuff. This isn't like you and me talking about this here. I mean, these are people that get paid to do this on a regular basis. So I have a feeling there might be a 50 basis point increase. I'd love to kind of see what the comments are, because we'll know in a couple days here. And then, like, the flip side is, though, we've got the CME group, but then the CNBC Fed survey thinks it's only going to be a quarter of a point. So you got people really going back and forth here on this. So there's not a clear path, and the jobs miss by missing by like 35% or whatever the number was, that probably has a lot to do with what the Fed's going to do. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean,
what, so do you think it's going to be 25 or 50?
I'd like to see 50 personally. The odds tell me it's 50. I'm like a coin flip at this point. I don't really know, because it's really mixed. And the Fed historically is very, they kind of test the waters a little bit. So, mm-hmm. I'd like to see 50. I don't know if they're going to do it.
Yeah.
That's probably the best way to look at this here. So what do you think about these senators asking for a 75 basis point cut? I mean, is that just wishful thinking? Is that to grab some headlines? I thought that was pretty fascinating.
Maybe they're thinking if they ask for that, they'll be more likely to get the 50.
Well, remember, the Fed's not political, Sarah. So
it's
they
true.
Don't they
true.
Don't they don't they don't listen to that stuff. So, yeah. I think they're let's talk about Jerome Powell here for a second, because, his legacy as the Federal Reserve chairman is really dependent on hitting this soft landing after waiting too late to raise the rate in 2021 when they were printing so much money. And there's a pretty small window to do that. So maybe that's a driver here. And I don't know if that's a good reason for it to be a driver. That could very well be a driver. It's the economy is growing faster than expected. So the Fed does have time to lower rates at a measured pace. I think this economy data is all weird. It's a lot of mixed signals.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of mixed signals. I'm going to be like very interested to see where this comes in at.
We'll talk about it next week. That's for sure. So, with that in mind, we'll take a quick break here. So what's the final word? We're going to talk about this next week, 50 or 25. I'm going to go with 50. I'm going to get a little aggressive here.
I'm going to go 50.
All right. So we'll see if we're right. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We got some industry news here. Very interesting stuff around the Clear Cooperation news, as well as some more information about how much the attorneys are seeking in the NAR settlement lawsuit. You're going to love this number, Sarah. We'll be right back on Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM.
For the best local mortgage service and great rates on your money, look no further than Mortgage America. We've been operating in the greater Philadelphia area for 40 years with a focus on smooth, easy access to home purchasing. Whether you're a first-time buyer, upsizing or downsizing, or just refinancing, we have programs for you. We also have closing cost assistance programs and access to subsidized interest rates. Pre-approval is free, no costs or commitments. To learn more, visit our website at mymortgageamerica.com. Or give us a call at 610-439-8000. We always have a person available to take your call with around-the-clock human service. Purchase your home with the personalized, local service you find at Mortgage America.
Mortgage America is an equal housing lender. NMLS 128501.
When you're getting a mortgage, you shouldn't have to sacrifice great service just to get a great rate. At Mortgage America, we've been lending with this philosophy for over 35 years. We have access to great low rates without the complications and delays of big or online banks. We're a local Pennsylvania lender with loan officers that you can actually meet. As PHFA's number one lender, we specialize in all residential mortgage programs, including first-time buyer programs and low-down payment options. For your free pre-approval, call us at 610-439-8000 or apply online at mymortgageamerica.com.
Mortgage America is equal housing lender. NMLS 128501.
Have you considered a career in real estate? Do you want control over your income? Whether you have a license or not, call us today at 610-692-6976 or visit tomtool.com. Join our team, the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline.
Welcome back to Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. She's Sarah Time, and we both work at the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline, the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania since 2018. And we've got some news on clear cooperation in real estate, as well as what some of the attorneys are asking for in the aftermath of the Sitzer Burnett lawsuit. And we're going to talk about some baby boomer comments that I find fascinating, and they may give you an insight into what's happening with inventory long term in the market. So if you like what you hear, you get some value out of this, make sure to subscribe to the channel, hit the bell for notifications. And if you want to get in touch with our team to talk about how to navigate these baby boomers sitting on their houses, planning never to sell. This is their words, not mine. We'll get into that in the third segment. You can schedule a call with Sarah and our team using the link in the comments. So NAR had this closed-door meeting last week. We talked about it a little bit. And it was all about this clear cooperation rule, which, if you don't know what it is, it basically tells a seller that if you hire an agent, it's got to be in the MLS. That's the short of it if you want to be a member of NAR. And they had this closed-door meeting because there's been a lot of pushback on this. The DOJ has been targeting this. You know, the goal was to crack down on pocket listings. And there was these kind of two groups. There was some people like Glenn Kelman, Redfin CEO, Leo Pareja, EXP CEO, some other folks that said were in favor of it. And then there's the vast majority that are not. Compass, Robert Refkin, a bunch of other folks. And apparently at the meeting last week, and this is according to a source, so this is all alleged.
Allegedly.
So allegedly, there was a group of about 80 brokerages that band together at the meeting that said, hey, we want an end to this. We don't like it. Agents and sellers should be allowed to market properties as they see fit based on their agreements. Sellers should be allowed to keep their identity off the MLS. And it's forced cooperation. Among those people was Gary Gold. He sold the Playboy Mansion. I actually know Gary myself. Great, great dude. Mauricio Yumansky from the agency, Robert Refkin from Compass, and a bunch of others. And now they're, you know, you got to love NAR. They make no decision, right? So there's nothing done. They did have a statement that came out after this meeting because nothing happened. And it was the MLS Technology and Emerging Issues Advisory Board discussed it. And they have another meeting coming up. So that's the short of it here. So the advisory board is going to reconvene in October to consider the rule further. And they reviewed feedback and proposals regarding the optional no commingling rule and the brokerage back office feed. So it sounds like they're reviewing everything here. Do you think this rule is going to go away? Like, what do you think about all this? Because I've got some clearer opinions the more I've read on this story, because it's all kind of broke when we were on the show last week.
Well, I mean, if a clear majority is saying that they don't like this, I mean, I think that they'll have to at least discuss it, which is what it sounds like they're doing. But I don't know that I can see them completely taking that away, because that's what, like, holds some power, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so I think the challenge is that you got, like, it's the MLS. They want to control everything. And right. The MLS is, after all of this, these lawsuits, I do agree with you. The MLS is, they hold a lot of power here, and they like to hold power. They're trying to stay relevant.
Right.
That's fine. The direct tie-in with NAR, I think, is the problem a lot of people have, because, like, we have no choice. We've got to be members of NAR. I know other people that have opted out because they can get MLS access without being members of NAR. So this is all kind of tied together in a bigger picture. I do think this is going to get rolled back, mainly because of the DOJ investigation, because that's being targeted by the DOJ.
So how much, like, rollback? Like, what do you think?
I just think you just get rid of it. I mean, yeah. It's... You know, I don't like the idea of limiting people's options. Like, imagine you're not selling real estate. You call me. I meet with you and Eric. Hey, so Sarah, and let's say you had some reason you didn't want it on the MLS, right? Mm-hmm. You're, you know, famous actor or something. Because LA is where this, like, yeah. I mean, that has the most. And it's like, hey, you know, if you want to list with me, you got to put this on the MLS. We have no option here.
Right.
It's just that's going to turn off some people. You're forcing them to go FSBO or go with a non-NAR member. So it's actually hurting the membership here having this rule.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there's some other reason that people don't want it on there. I mean, you have no idea, but it's limiting options for consumers. I mean, I think that's the problem with this. It's not so much getting everything in the MLS, I think, can make sense. But
I mean, I do like being pretty confident that if it's out there, it's on the MLS, you know? Like,
I agree with that,
to, like,
yeah.
Feed through, like, all these different sources to figure out, especially, like, if a client calls and is like, hey, I want to see 123 Main Street, and you're like, where is that? You know?
Yeah.
I kind of like being able to go to one place and have the info there, but certainly it doesn't make sense to force sellers to have to do that.
I also would argue that it's the best way to get a home sold and get the best price and the best terms. You remember Stephen Cohen? He came down, he's from New York City. He works with a lot of high-end properties up there. He talked at our office. I've spoken with him a couple times. He goes, of course, you know what to do. It's the same playbook. And it's, you know, this idea of these pocket listings is usually like a privacy thing for a seller. So they may prefer that over getting the best price in some cases. But if you want to get the best price, which is what most people's objective is, getting it on the MLS and exposing the property to everybody is going to be the right way to go.
Right.
Now, here's the problem I have with this. I want to get your reaction. So you've got these people that are speaking out in favor of clear cooperation. So Glenn Kelman, fine. Leo Pareja, so they talk about this as forced cooperation. So Leo Pareja is the CEO of eXp.
Okay.
So eXp has this policy now. You've heard of it. We talked about this where, hey, we're going to totally split up any compensation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to offer any buyer compensation on any of our listings. So it's they want everything to be on the MLS.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to have to offer compensation. That seems pretty hypocritical to me.
Right, right. They want to, like, use the MLS for the exposure and then
not cooperate.
But
so
then
they
not
want
cooperate.
It's I don't see how you can have it both ways here. And I just don't like that. I mean, it's like if you have a position, have a position, but you can't just go all in on everything's got to be in the MLS. We all have to cooperate, which is what clear cooperation is. It's forced cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it comes time to compensate agents on the purchase side, saying,
we're
not going to do any of that, and that's going to be our policy nationwide.
Right, right. Yeah, that doesn't really make any sense.
So it just seems very hypocritical to me. So I found that pretty interesting. And, you know, it looks like the support for clear cooperation has dropped to about like 28% based on some surveys that were done. So I would hope they revise this rule. I'd also like people to have like an actual position, not just go back and forth. I don't understand how you can like one and not the other when it comes to that. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Right, right. Yeah, that really doesn't.
Okay, I'm glad you validated my moral high ground here, Sarah. So thank you. We've also got some other news. This just broke today. So tell me what you think about this. Plaintiff's attorneys in the Sitzer Burnett Real Estate Commission lawsuit are seeking 1/3 of the $679 million settlement, plus reimbursement for over $16 million in costs after logging 107,000 hours in the case since 2019. So they're asking for more than $220 million, plus the additional 16 for cost. They want $226.425 million, roughly one-third of the settlement amount in this case.
Was that able to be negotiated?
So the way that these things work, I think, is that they have to submit it to the judge for approval in a class action lawsuit. Let's actually get clarity on this because I don't want to misspeak. But, I mean, that seems like an awful lot for the attorneys when they talked about how they were fighting for all these sellers that were wronged, and they used words like they had the wool pulled over their eyes and it's an insane number to me.
That is wild. Right? Like
now this is what usually you get, right? Usually it's 25% to 35%. So I understand that. But when you get an attorney that, you know, comes out, so Michael Ketchmark has done this, and he said that it's, you know, I mean, that the wool was pulled over the eyes of sellers. And then, I mean, what are the actual, like, class members getting? Like, that's my question here. And the reasons behind this were, there was substantial risk due to the nature of the lawsuit. They're calling it the riskiest litigation or among the riskiest litigation class ever. And I mean, it's just a big number. Like, I'm just shocked by this. I mean, Michael Ketchmark saying he spent 7,000 hours and is requesting $10 million based on his $1,450 hourly rate. I mean, it's just, the total attorney compensation based on the hours they spent comes out to more than $92 million based on all the hourly rates that our friends over at Now Bam had calculated. And what do you think about this?
So I guess, one, prior to all of this starting, I'm wondering, was this like discussed in advance that it was going to be a higher percentage than maybe normal given the risk and the hours that they were going to have to put in?
So the percentage looks like it's in the range, just to be clear. Like, I Googled this. It's 25% to 35% of the settlement amount gets awarded to the, that's awarded to the plaintiffs. That's about what the attorneys get.
Yeah. That sounds kind of like a set range there.
Yeah. It sounds like a prefixed. It's wild to me. I mean, this is no different than everything they argued against.
Right.
And I think one of the challenges is that you got to get someone to go sue these attorneys now. So you got to find another attorney that's going to sue them. And that's
right,
probably
and
just not going
to
happen.
Don't like to sue each other.
That is very true. I've heard that from many attorneys. Like that's like their unwritten rule.
Yeah.
Sounds like what they litigated this whole case against was unwritten rules.
Right.
So
right.
Very fascinating here. So, I mean, what like.
Well, and like interesting that they want to recoup back on hours and time and investments that they made, because that is what agents are looking to do when they are also wanting to get paid at the when you get something to settlement, because there is a lot of hours, there's a lot of time, there's a lot of conversations, there's a lot, like, it's not just the times and the conversations that you have with your client. There is so much behind the scenes work and hours that get put into it, and like that's also what we want to be paid for.
Well, I think that's exactly the point. That's why this kind of just rubs me the wrong way, because it's exactly like, you know, people say that, you know, and I'm not here to defend. I'm here to educate. The amount of hours that you and I have put into transactions that people never see and don't know about, and that's where agents can improve, is communicating better what they actually do. That's something that we've made a conscious effort to do with our team, so we can earn people's trust and they see all the work that we put into it. In fact, our whole listing presentation is designed around, here's everything we do differently. Mm-hmm. And that's what our buyer presentation is designed around. Most people don't even have these presentations. So certainly you could do a better job communicating that, but it's literally the same basis that real estate agents earn a living is, hey, well, I did all this research. I helped with title. I did this. I did that. All these hours that were spent that folks don't realize. So it's pretty incredible to me. And again, this might be like the hypocritical segment of the show. I mean, it just seems like so hypocritical that they're saying this isn't cool, but I'm going to do the same thing.
Right. Right.
It's an interesting world that we live in here.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I mean, although I think that we knew from day one, the only people that were really going to be walking away with this with any money, like with money in their pocket, is the attorneys.
That's very clear. Well, and Sitzer with his startup. I mean, that's like, it just seems like this whole thing was set up to launch other businesses, and NAR was the mark in it all.
Right. Yeah, and that's...
Well, let's talk about what the public's done so far, right? I mean, we're seeing the vast majority of sellers are paying commissions. And it's been 30 days since this has happened. Mm-hmm. I have not seen one situation that has come up where there wasn't appropriate compensation, wasn't, you know, it paid in some form. And sometimes the seller had to make it up. Sometimes the buyer had to make it up. But we're doing enough business that there's a good case study there. It's just a lot more paperwork, I think, is really the fallout of this more than anything else.
Right, right.
And we have, what, 3 additional disclosures we got to get signed now?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think in what I have seen and in every conversation that I have had with agents on the other side, if I have buyers that I'm taking out, like, there has always been compensation offered. Some of it has, like, in some cases, like, it has been lower than mm-hmm. what is kind of, like,
I agree with
we
that.
expect to see. But, you know, oftentimes in those cases, the agent is also saying, you know, you can certainly write it in to try to get more. And then you just need to be able to have those conversations with your client. Like, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. This is, and it sometimes mm-hmm. it also depends on, like, who you're up against, how many offers are in, like, because you want your client to get the home, but you need to know prior to putting in these offers, you know, how compensation is being paid and kind of, you know, how you want to sort that out.
I totally agree. And I mean, we're seeing that there have been some where it's been lower. There's some where there's been more. But the point is that, like, it's being paid, like, pretty regularly. So I think it's something you need to be aware of. And that's really the short of it. So we got these additional disclosures. I do like people having to sign agreements and knowing what they're getting into. Yep. I think that's been a big miss for a lot of, especially that, like, window of time, like 2020 to 2022, where a lot of people are like, I didn't know what I was signing. I just wanted to write the offer. And, yep. and good agents were explaining that. But there's a lot of bad agents that got out of the business. So mm-hmm. Or they still have a license, just don't sell anything. Yep. And so they weren't really explaining things properly. So I do like the disclosure up front. I think that's probably the biggest change to come out of this, because these contracts do mean something.
Right.
And a lot of people, they're like, oh, I didn't know I signed this. I forgot. I don't know how you forget when it's right at the beginning right. before you do anything.
Right. And what is nice about it, like, it being at the beginning, you're, like, breaking all of that information down right from the get-go, so there isn't confusion there. And it's also not being mixed in with all of the other offer documents. Because
exactly.
if you are,
exactly.
let's say you meet somebody out, and this, like, if it was, like, a fast-paced situation where you saw a home, had to get the offer in right away, even if you are trying to explain everything to someone, that's a lot to take in all at once. Mm-hmm. So being able to kind of break that up into 2 separate pieces kind of lets it sink in a little bit more, I think.
Well, I agree. I mean, it's hey, here's what to expect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people need to hear things more than once. And,
yeah.
and you know, these are consumers that don't know about what goes on. So, you know, the fact that you got to disclose it a couple times and, hey, here's what it is. It's in any closing costs if there's any additional money owed, because most people wouldn't even, like, enforce those contracts. So I do like a lot of the—I like that change a lot. And yeah. the other stuff, I mean, we found ways to communicate this pretty easily. We're totally compliant. I don't see it being that big of a deal.
And I really haven't had a ton of issues with, like, so far, most agents have gotten back very quickly with— hey, this is what the seller is offering. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been, like, hours of, like, waiting. It's people have been pretty quick.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, there's still some things I wouldn't recommend doing that I see other agents doing in terms of, like, how they're communicating it. But that's not my problem. I mean, we're doing things the way that we see is going to be fit. So, you know, it's to me, it's actually, you know, we talk about pre-qualifying people all the time at our organization. A lot of times people don't pre-qualify, like, at all. And then you mm-hmm. walk up there and the appointment's a disaster because you didn't prep properly. So this is actually, like, forced preparation, mm-hmm. which is going to be a big lift for a lot of people, that they thought they could cut that corner and usually didn't go well.
Right.
Now
right.
it's not even an option. So yeah. There is some good that's coming out of this as well. But that payment is, it's a big payment.
It's huge.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We are going to talk about these baby boomer comments. These are incredible to me. I want to get your reaction to them here, Sarah, next on Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM.
You shouldn't have to deal with all the red tape when getting your mortgage from a big or online bank. At Mortgage America, we have access to big bank money, but with the personalized and detailed service of a local bank. We are here in your community and ready to serve with fast settlements, low down payment options, and first-time homebuyer programs. Pre-approval is free, no costs or commitments. For more information, visit our website at mymortgageamerica.com or give us a call at 610-439-8000.
Mortgage America, NMLS 128501.
I'm Tom Tool of the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline. If you're thinking of becoming a real estate agent in the greater Philly area, I have a special offer for you. Our team did $165 million of volume in 2021, making us the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania and a top 1% team nationally. Our agents love us because we offer them a successful career, a great life, and an unbeatable culture. Agents who've been with us for at least a year average 30-plus sales. Even our brand new agents average 17 to 24 sales a year. We offer proven systems and expert training. We help you set more appointments and sell more houses. Now here's the offer. If you don't have a real estate license yet, we offer real estate scholarships so you can get one for free. Check it out at realestatescholarshipprogram.com or visit the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline at tomtool.com. That's tomtoolwithane.com. Get more out of your real estate career, and remember the real estate golden rule. You always get more when you work with Tom Tool. The Tom Tool Sales Group is the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania with over $165 million in volume for 2021. I'm Tom Tool, and our team has achieved that kind of success by being a great place to work with and to work for. No one knows Greater Philly better than we do. We know real estate, but more importantly, we're real people. We hire the best agents, and we give them all the tools to succeed. Even our brand new agents sell 17 to 24 homes a year because our team delivers the best experience in real estate. Teams deliver a better experience than individuals, and we're a top 1% real estate team in the country. We call it AAA service. We're your advocate, ally, and advisor. Because this isn't a transaction to us. It's a relationship. If you're buying or selling a home, call the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline at 610-692-6976 or visit tomtool.com. That's tomtoolwithane.com. Sell your home for more, and remember the real estate golden rule. You always get more when you work with Tom Tool. All right, all right. Welcome back to Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. She's Sarah Timon. We both work at the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline, the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania since 2018. And we are talking about baby boomer mindset in the marketplace. And I want to share, there were some interesting statistics that came out, some incredible comments. It's always interesting what people say when they're filling out these surveys. So according to a survey by Clever, let me back this up. What is like the most sought after home you see on the market? Like the type of home? Like we got first time buyer properties, we got the move up, you got the premium stuff. Where do you see the most competition or the most demand?
I would say a combo of the first time. Well, actually, probably not so much the like step up home.
I agree, and that's where a lot of baby boomers live.
You know, it's not uncommon for that actually to still be their first purchase because they didn't do
yes.
the starter home. So, yeah.
So I totally agree with what you're saying because, you know, the household formation has changed, mm-hmm. right? Like people are getting married like much later in life on average. I'm not saying like there's always the one-offs. That's not what I'm talking about.
Sure.
People tend to get married like mid-30s now. I think that's a pretty normal age range to that certain, that's not what I did. I mean, that's not what a lot of people have done. And then they have like kids like right away. So they're not waiting to have kids like a lot of people do. And what happens is those people did not buy houses. We know millennials did not buy homes right away. So now there's all this millennial demand. Mm-hmm. There's more 30-year-olds than ever in the country right now. And they're all looking for that kind of house because they're all having kids and they're like, I need some more space. Mm-hmm. You know, once you have a baby, like life changes, you know, immediately, right?
Yeah.
So that's a big driver behind this. So I'm interested because baby boomers, they control so much of the world's wealth, about 1/8 of it. And there was a survey done by Clever Real Estate, and they said more than half of the baby boomers out there, 54%, have no intention of ever selling their homes, ever. That's people from 1946 to 1964. There's a lot of reasons behind this. One is that they like that the home fits their lifestyle. And people are also living longer too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's 52%. 47% want to age in place. And these, you know, they also, a lot of times they have like a paid off mortgage. There's a lot of things happening here. So does this number surprise you? Because there's people that talk about the silver tsunami that's going to happen. I don't see any data that backs that up anytime soon.
Right. So wait, what was the total percent that said they plan on never?
54%.
54%. That is like for saying they're never going to sell. That's higher than what I would think it. What I would think it is, I could see it being, 54% say we don't plan on selling within the next, 5-10 years. But
this is ever. So this
but is- ever is, yeah, that's a higher number than I would think.
I was shocked by that. But I do talk to these people on the phone. They're like, you're carrying me out of here in a box. Like, anyone ever say that to you?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That happens all the time.
Yes.
So that's one component here. And I think that's why inventory is under this, like, sort of strain, because these people have these paid-off homes. Mm-hmm. And now you got to go buy a home at, let's call it, a 6 rate. And it's a 55 and over. The taxes are typically higher because they're newer. So they've got these homes where it's very low to live there. There's a low cost to doing that. So I can understand that. But that's not an overwhelming driver. According to the survey, one quarter of the respondents, 22%, said their emotional attachment's the reason they stay put.
I could see that.
19% said they won't give up the ties to their community or the friendships they've built. I get that as well. And 25% said they can't afford to move to a new home because there may be a lot of reasons behind that, especially if they got like a low mortgage rate. Mm-hmm. If you're at like, say you have, a $200,000 loan on your place, it's worth $6,000 or $7,000. Well, you go buy that new home, let's say it's $500.
Yeah.
You're taking that, unless you're buying cash. Like, there's a lot of things here that are factors. So all of those things are part of this. But then here's the thing that really shocked me. So in the survey, and these were the comments here. So over 50% of boomers think younger generations could buy a home if they tried harder. Like, this is insane to me that they would even say this.
Yeah.
What do you think about this comment? Because there's a lot of data behind it, but what do you think? It's 57% was the number.
I mean, I think that the generations that are struggling to get into the homes would have very different things to say than, oh, yeah, I'm not trying hard enough. There's, I feel like it's that doesn't stack up. But, I feel like that isn't a completely surprising comment, just like kind of coming from that generation. But you would also think that many of them have children who are working to get into homes right now and maybe have seen some of the obstacles that they mm-hmm. have overcome trying to get in. And even if it's biased because it's their kid, like, I'm sure they don't think that their kid just isn't trying. Well, some might, but
I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean,
right. Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. And I don't think that just trying harder is always going to be able to be the solution that works for everyone.
Well, and I think that what they look at is that they said that, then it goes further, right? 69%, 7 in 10 believe the world would be a better place with fewer problems if younger generations were more like them. I mean, these comments are like, it's like an old person talking to you and like you young whippersnappers and like yelling at you with like the fist up there.
Right.
Now, I do agree that some people aren't making strong financial decisions. And
sure.
And I think that might have a lot to do with this here, because you see younger generations, they're like prioritize experiences over mm-hmm. wealth building, and they want to do that. Well, and I can appreciate that. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. But you look at the boomers who basically their goal was like, hey, I'm going to buy a house, mm-hmm. going to build wealth, and like that's what's going to happen.
They also might not completely understand some of the jobs that some of the younger generations have
point.
And that they can be like, a lot of it is virtual, or a lot of it may be, marketing using platforms that did not exist.
Or like an influencer, like that might blow people's minds.
Right. Or like, I feel like there's, people that market to people for the, as they're searching for things online and kind of like targeted things like that, like stuff that, marketing, when that would have been a job that maybe they would have had, would have looked completely different. So the work harder, you're just on your computer. Well, that's how you work now. You know, like you can't go just like put an ad in the paper.
Sure.
That's not going to be effective. So that may be where some of that comes in.
I thought that was fascinating. I mean, those comments are just incredible to me, but it gives you some perspective because a lot of these people, they've built businesses. I mean, the boomers really, they did a lot for the country in terms of, you know, their generations and everything and what they did to, you know, through World War II and all these other things. And not to be nostalgic, but I can understand it that when you see people, you know, they're influencers, right? Like that's a real job now. I can get it. I mean, you know, I don't know what your parents are like, but my parents don't get some, and you know, yeah. We have pretty normal jobs relative to mm-hmm. what other people say. But I mean, we're also on the radio and doing all this content marketing and other stuff. And I think right. that blows people's minds a little bit until they see the results from it. So that's a good point of view, Sarah. So do you think, I think you're in for a long road with the boomers. They're not giving up. They're holding on.
Right. Yes. I mean, I'm guessing for some of that, the 54% that said, you know, they're never leaving. Obviously, if circumstances change, they may have to if their home can't be, you know, if they can't do whatever needs to be done to it to make it where it can maybe be all first floor living or things like that. There'll certainly be some that, while maybe they never want to, may have to. But what's also like kind of a shame in there, and I completely understand that, like, why would I leave this place that I love in a community yeah. that I love where I know it, like, this is what I want. Why would I trade that in to have to pay more money to be in something like smaller where it's not where I'm from, yada, yada. But you do see some of these homes that because they were not able to be kept up with, both like, you know, inside and outside, the value of them just kind of drops. I mean, there are certain things that people are willing to go in and do, but if everything kind of starts to fall into disrepair, it's a whole different category of who's going to purchase it and the amount of work that would go into it just to get it up to where, like, maybe you would want to do, like, just the cosmetic things is completely different.
Well, and that's a great point. I think that you're talking about that is that these homes do, like, a lot of times these homes come to the market and they need a good amount of work. Like, yeah. you're putting a lot of renovation money into it. The other thing to think about here, too, is that, you know, when people move, it's usually there's a life event. We've talked about this a lot. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's what you see happen is maybe, unfortunately, one of these people dies, right? Or they have, like, a health issue. They can't do mm-hmm. the steps anymore. Or yeah. they need to be in a place where it's just too much maintenance. And sometimes that creeps up on people. Like,
right.
you know, I'm getting old. I've pulled a couple muscles recently, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm obviously not a baby boomer, but I'm like, man, I got to like take care of myself. Well, someone has an injury like that happens when they're doing yard work or something mm-hmm. that can kind of be that like catalyst. Like maybe it's time to move. So that's a really great point on your part that because it's a lot of maintenance taking care of these properties.
Right.
I just can't get over these comments there. I mean, it's like they try harder. Like it's funny to see that. And I think there is some truth to that. Some people don't prioritize home ownership like baby boomers have, and that might have a lot to do with it.
Right.
Now, a lot of these folks are in a position where it's like, all right, I got kids. Like, what am I doing here? Mm-hmm. Or I want to get into a school district and, you know, rent. There's not a lot of rentals available or, mm-hmm. or whatever else is going on. So that can make a lot of sense.
Sure.
So what do you think that the other generations think about this? What do you think the Gen Xers think about this? These comments.
I mean, I would imagine they don't really like agree with them completely, but they, you know what, that's just the generation right below them.
I don't think Gen Xers care because they're a little older. I think they're already kind of established and ready to go. But then they look at like, they rated these generations in this survey by like most to least responsible, which is insane to me. I don't know how you understand that. Where, you know, the least responsible Gen X was right there with boomers as the most responsible. But then millennials were even a little further past that. And it's really these Gen Z folks. They were the ones that they're like, hey, these are the least responsible for the affordable housing crisis. So,
this is saying like my generation is the least responsible
for the housing crisis. So they're saying that, you know, the people that are most responsible are millennials. And they're the ones that prioritize a lot of those things. Like they're the people that are looking for these homes that boomers have right now.
Right. Although, I guess according to that, then the boomers are saying that they are the most responsible?
No, they're the least responsible for it.
Oh, gotcha.
41% of people in the survey felt they were least responsible for the crisis, and 32% thought millennials were the most responsible.
Okay.
Followed by Gen X, then Gen Z. These comments are kind of silly. I mean, things change from generation to generation.
Right. Interesting.
Interesting stuff. So that's all we got this week on Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. You want to follow Sarah? She's at Ty_TyTime. You can follow me at I'm Tom Tool 3RRD, both on Instagram. Hopefully you got some value out of this. Subscribe to the channel. And we'll be back next Tuesday on WWDB 860 AM.
Travels, you don't have to miss a minute of your favorite WWDB shows. Download the free WWDB app to listen anywhere. You can also stream us live, listen to podcasts, and learn more about our great shows at WWDBAM.com. And you can always tune in on your phone or any smart speaker. Tell Alexa, play WWDB AM 860.